This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. In 2013, the total energy demand per capita was 1.72 tons of oil per person. Our country relies primarily on fossil fuels, while renewable energy only makes up 1% of our fuel mix. This immense gap in our energy consumption presses on our need to turn to renewable energy and to maximize the efficiency of our current energy systems. So here to speak to us about renewable energy and its importance is Engineer Gurmit Singh, the Chairman of the Centre for Environment Technology Development Malaysia. Mr. Gurmit, how are you today?
Okay.
We rely very heavily on fossil fuels, as I've mentioned just now. Who are the primary culprits of this energy consumption in our country?
Well, basically all the electricity consumers, because most of the non-fossil fuels are used in electricity generation. The rest of the fossil fuels are used in your vehicles. All the car drivers, every vehicle that goes, using basically fossil fuel. Although, of course, as part of the electricity mix, there's a small portion of hydro, there's a small portion of biomass, and as you mentioned, renewable. But people must not think renewable is just only solar. Renewable is more than solar.
What is it?
Renewable is any form of energy that can be that comes directly or as close from the sun as possible and that can be recharged. For example, biomass. Trees that grow. You cut the wood and burn, that's biomass. That's a renewable source because trees grow again. They are renewable in that sense. The only reason why fossil fuel is actually also produced from trees, but it took thousands of years for it to be converted from dead trees to fossil fuel, and therefore it's limited. But everything actually comes from the sun. So as close to the sun as you can get, whether it's solar, whether it's wind, whether it's wave, whether it's geothermal, all these are renewables.
So, why did you say solar is not renewable?
No, it's only part of the renewable. A lot of people
think... understanding.
That is where the problem is. A lot of people think solar is only renewable.
Right. It's a
like, for example, palm oil mills in this country use a lot of biomass waste. That's a renewable energy source. The statistics don't even appear in the national energy balance that you're talking about. Because the country is not monitoring the amount of electricity the palm oil mills use themselves because it's not connected to the grid.
To a grid.
And so there's this other phobia that they only measure things that are connected to the grid. And solar, also people are talking like, for example, feed-in tariff because it's connected to the grid. But if you have solar panels that use battery as a storage and feed the houses, they are also energy. Only thing, they're not grid connected.
Mm-hmm. So what is the importance of measuring that?
Measuring which?
As in the energy that is not being measured because it's not part of the grid.
Yeah.
Why do we need to know this?
I think that is what we need to know because it's total part of the energy. And I've been arguing with the planners and all that sort of thing. I say, why are you not capturing? Because if you take that into account, renewable will be much more. Palm oil mills are basically running on renewable energy. And that, I think, is a few hundred megawatts.
There is a debate about hydroelectric.
Yeah,
is that
the debate
renewable
about
energy?
Hydroelectric is basically about the size of the hydroelectric. And this is where there's a big debate. Do large hydros, are they considered renewable? Malaysia has taken the official stand that based on the ASEAN definition, all hydros are renewable. But as an environmentalist and in the context of even SEDA, only small hydros are considered renewable. Because the reason why large hydros are not considered renewable, because they displace a lot of people, the large hydros, take Bakun even, for example. Then they also destroy a lot of forests, because very often they are in forested areas. And then the other thing that a lot of people don't realize is, as long as there's vegetation trapped in the reservoir, it generates methane. And the methane is 21 times of global warming effect than CO2. So, in fact, some studies from Brazil have shown that the total amount of methane generated from the hydroelectric dam is more than the CO2 from all the coal-fired power stations.
Oh, dear.
So, how can you call that renewable then?
Right. Okay. We have a long way to go. So, in terms of definition, in terms of policy, who decides all of that on a regional level?
You see, this is a trouble.
Because you said Malaysia has, hydroelectric is part of a renewable.
Originally, there is supposed to be an energy ministers meeting, ASEAN energy ministers meeting. I don't know whether this definition of large hydro was agreed there. But I remember in a big argument with Lim King Yek, the late Lim King Yek, at one of the public forums where he was saying all hydros are the... He used the UN, but I don't know which UN authority he said. Somebody in UN had said, oh, they are also renewable. But there was no scientific basis to justify it. So I rejected that definition. At that
okay. This is a Mr. Gurmit Singh definition. And what are the consequences if we don't continue to wean ourselves of fossil fuels?
I think the basic problem is what is going to be discussed in Paris, this
the COP21 talks.
CO2 emissions keep going up, global warming will increase, and the consequences of global warming is an increase in the severity and frequency of weather extremes, like floods, droughts. They are already beginning to happen. And ultimately, the fear is if global emissions don't get reduced and they continue at the present trend, we could easily see a rise of global temperatures within the century of up to 6 degrees centigrade. Now, 60 degrees is disastrous. Studies have been done by the IPCC, Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, that shows, and I think the chart was produced in the Straits Times many, many years ago, that shows a lot of ecosystems will be upset. Sea level will rise. Sea level rise will affect all low-lying cities. Many of the world's capitals are near low-lying cities. Shanghai, New York, big cities are all coastal. In Malaysia, maybe Kuching. Even the sea level rise could even come up to KL. Yeah? So consequences will be quite disastrous. But the way people are moving, you see, this debate in climate change is so fixated on Western interests. And it's basically big power politics. You know, U.S. exercising muscle all the way not to do anything because the Senate doesn't want to move. There are people in the Senate who keep denying there's anything such as global warming even.
But they have committed.
They have
to
moved
COP21.
A bit, but not very much.
Okay.
What they are doing is they moved away from the Kyoto Protocol, which had legally binding targets. They signed it, but the Senate refused to ratify it. They never did. And if you look at the total emissions of the U.S., it has gone up 30% above 1990 levels. They were supposed to bring them down to 1990 levels by the year 2000. All developed countries were supposed to do. The only one that came near to it was the European Union, right? So even Japan has abandoned the Kyoto Protocol. So I find this political will has become extremely weak. And now they're talking of INDC, which are nothing but self-declared commitments, which are very weak compared with Kyoto Protocol, for which there's no penalty, even if you don't comply.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, what is there to show? That's why I'm not very excited about Paris. I don't think the way political things are playing out, like I saw an email this morning, which says there's a big fight going on right at the moment now between G77 and the rest, because the G77 text, which was submitted for the negotiation, has been taken up by the chairman. And the G77 is fighting. The text must come in and we should negotiate on that.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this political power play going on, even now. So that has been very frustrating because I've been following this negotiation since the 90s. And I've been very, very disappointed that there are so many vested interests at play who don't want to let the problem be addressed adequately. And if you look at global emissions, they have gone up. They have gone up 30 to 40%.
The U.S.?
All over the world. For example, the global emissions were supposed to be kept at 350 ppm. They are already now at 410 ppm. The window of opportunity for taking action actually shrunk. And so much so that if you talk in terms of global emissions available, the amount available for developing countries has shrunk now because the developed countries have used up most of that emissions that were considered safe. Some people even talk about climate injustice going on.
Mm-hmm. Where does Malaysia stand in all of this?
You see, the problem in Malaysia was initially we were very strong on the issues itself. In 1992, I was telling one of your colleagues just now that Dato' Ranjit Sathia, when he was leader of the delegation of Malaysia in New York, rejected the convention, which was a U.S. draft, pushed down the throats of everybody because the U.S. didn't want to accept the earlier negotiated text. Malaysia said, we will not accept, but eventually we signed it. But the problem in Malaysia has been, we have not been really very progressive in our negotiations. Nowadays, we have ended up towing the line of other countries, like the least LMDC, they call it.
Mm-hmm.
And G77. But we don't seem to be pushing our own initiatives very much. Of course, we are now trying to do some things because of the PM's commitment in Copenhagen of 40% intensity reduction. A lot of people get confused. Is it not 40% absolute reduction relative to GDP? So if your GDP goes up, of course, the reductions are lower. So I think at least Malaysia now beginning to do things to move in that direction because for a long time, many Malaysians, especially those in power, were saying, oh, we don't have to do anything. All the job of the west. But you look carefully, it's, you cannot keep on pointing fingers. You have to do ourselves. Mm-hmm. And our emissions, as you rightly pointed out, have been going up. In fact, there was a 10-year period where the amount of emissions from our electricity generation were the highest growth in the world. So this has been my one of my biggest problems. We need to decouple our electricity consumption from our GDP. And I've always said, let's look at Denmark. Denmark managed to do that because they went aggressively for renewable energy, energy efficiency, and the, while the economy grew at 1%, their GDP, but the electricity energy consumption dropped by 3 or 4%. So this is what we need to do, decouple. But there are people in power who still think, like people in TNB, who thinks if there's a drop in the sale of electricity, their share prices will drop. Mm-hmm. I think that's very primitive thinking.
There's conflict of interest.
Yeah, and there's a conflict of interest, obviously.
What do you mean by energy efficiency?
Now, this is, I think, what the people call the low-hanging fruit. This is much more easier to achieve than even the renewable energy. This is a simple thing. Like, for example, even just talk about electricity. A lot of hotels and buildings are overcooled. You notice people have to wear jackets. Hotel rooms sets for 15 degrees C. When thermal comfort for Malaysians is about 24 to 30 degrees. So we can easily do that by reducing the amount of air conditioning, increasing the temperature settings. For every 1 degree increase in temperature setting, I was told you can reduce electricity consumption by 10%. Right? Now, so if you can do that in all government buildings, because you wanted to, you are looking at big energy guzzlers. Even among electricity, the big guzzlers are the heavy industries, aluminium smelters, for example, in Sarawak, iron and steel industry, then the commercial sector, all the complexes, shopping complexes, look at the amount of air conditioning that they have. If they can make that efficient, they can still bring it cool. But there are no incentives at the moment. You see, the government has been very slow in coming with the Renewable Energy Act. I remember sitting on the draft, and I was told recently the government had decided to abandon the Renewable Energy Act and is instead having an Energy Efficiency Action Plan. So there's a whole bunch of people called ESCOs, Energy Service Companies, who are very upset, who feel that if there's no act, there will be no driver in the private sector to use the services of ESCO to reduce the energy consumption. That's what it means, energy efficiency. And these are the low-hanging fruits. I agree that renewable energy is a tougher nut to crack. It'll take time. But part of the reason has been because Malaysia ignored renewable energy for a long time. I remember when Saddam came up with a study in 1998 where we tried to examine the history of renewable energy work in the country, and we entitled it Blowing in the Wind. Because we found that most of the time, country universities never bothered about energy, renewable energy or energy efficiency unless the prices of petrol went up. Then they did some work. Mm-hmm. Once the prices dropped, work stop. And I remember that time Leo Maggi dismissing our report when we proposed that renewable solar panels be put on all households. They could generate enough energy. He said, not possible. Yet 6 months later, because Mahathir and he attended the World Solar Summit, suddenly he comes back and says, oh, renewable is possible. So I think that our problem has been because of Petronas. We are a net oil exporter. Unlike many of the ASEAN countries, we ignored renewable energy because there was no incentive. We were making money from oil and gas, so burn more oil and gas.
Okay.
That has been our fundamental problem.
When we come back, we'll find out. You know, Malaysia is now the world's largest, third largest producer of solar equipment. Why is it we haven't taken off? I don't see most of our households using solar. That's coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. We have Engineer Gurmit Singh, Chairman of the Centre for Environment Technology Development Malaysia, CETDEM, discussing renewable energy and energy efficiency. You know, Mr. Gurmit, we are the third largest producer of solar equipment. Why is it solar hasn't taken off in Malaysia when it makes complete sense that we have so much sunlight to take advantage of?
I think first we must be clear what we mean by solar equipment. Are we talking solar photovoltaic equipment or solar water heating equipment? There are two functions of the solar. One is the infrared component of the thing that's used in solar water heaters. That have taken off on their own in our country. And I don't think there's a big industry at the moment producing solar water heaters. So what you're referring to is solar photovoltaic panels.
Okay.
The problem there is twofold. One, I've talked with the manufacturers and criticized them. I said, why are you not offering the solar photovoltaic panel at special prices to Malaysians? And they said, oh, there's no demand. That was the answer I gave from. Then the other one says, oh, we sell wherever there's a big demand. And since the demand is overseas, there's no requirement by the government that we should send a certain percentage of our output to the local market. So why should we do that? But I think the other misimpression a lot of people have on solar photovoltaic electricity, that's solar photovoltaic is for the generation of electricity, solar PV, is actually our solar radiation is not that great despite the fact that we are near the equator. For one main reason, cloud cover. We have a lot of cloud cover. So at the most, you have good solar sun radiation 6 hours a day only. You don't have it for 8 hours, you don't have 12 hours. And the parts of Malaysia that have better solar radiation are up north in Sabah, that area, and up in Kedah and Perlis. The rest, including KL, I have a solar panel in my house since 2004, and I know from the output, a Danish person was saying, hey, I'm getting as much solar PV from output as yours, and it's up north. The reason is cloud cover. That is what a lot of people don't realize. You must measure in terms of solar radiation that reaches our roof. And you look every time, like now the haze, how much sunlight comes through. When you have raining situation, most of the time we have clouds. So during the cloudy periods, the amount of radiation that comes in. So like from my house, I have 1 kilowatt-hour peak panel only because at that time they were very expensive. I spent $30,000 to install that. That's one of the other reasons, the cost.
And how much is that?
That is supposed to be, you know, your house, everything is kilowatt. So, for example, in your house, I don't know how many if you use 100 kilowatt hours, then I was getting 3 kilowatt hours. But my electricity, of course, not enough to cover the actual consumption I do. But mine is grid-connected. So that's the advantage of grid-connected electricity. You supply to the grid and you take from the grid. So mine is the net metering sort of thing.
Right.
And because of that and other things that I do, I was able to reduce my electricity consumption by 33%. Now it's gone up a bit because my wife has put in another refrigerator.
Right. Okay. There you go. Other sources of renewable energy.
The other sources of energy, renewable energy, as I said, one is biomass. Biomass refers to everything that's woody in nature. Palm oil waste, tree trunks and all that. And also food waste. A lot of people forget that your food waste is highly organic. So if you put your food waste in a biogas plant, you can generate methane. That methane can be burnt directly to cook or can be burnt into a light, or you have enough of the methane, you can run a gas turbine and generate electricity. So that's another source of a lot of people. If you look at SEDA's allocation of the thing, very few people have applied for biomass or biogas. That's a strange reason. Everybody is going for solar. Look, very nice, fancy, because the rate of return that they're offering on solar is one of the highest. That's all. But the reason why they had to come up with FIT is because the capital costs are high. Now the cost of panels have dropped from my days to now about 18,000. But people don't want to spend that sort of money unless the banks give them a loan. Mm-hmm. And the banks won't give them a loan if there's no payback period around. So with the new FIT rates offered, the banks are willing to give them the loan. The complaint now a lot of people have is all the small householder solar allocation for FIT has been used up. And now the big fellas are going in for bigger installation. So there is a debate going on. Were you supposed to help the small person, ordinary household to have it? Or are you helping the big person? Because the big person looking at the rate of return, oh, so much money to be made. Mm-hmm. So they're asking for 10 megawatt, 20 megawatt and all that. But that money is coming from a special government allocation. You see, one of the problems has been, I think, Malaysia has not put enough money, even in the forthcoming budget, for solar panel, for renewable energy. I argued for a long time that Petronas should allocate 1% of its profits for renewable energy. That has never happened. We need that sort of money for the takeoff, for solar part to take off, because it's very capital intensive. I think that's the reason. Biomass is not that capital intensive, but it's a bit messy. It has to be properly done. Then, as I mentioned to you, the palm oil mills are using all biomass waste. And then the other thing that we can do, which is in the long term, is actually we can call ocean thermal electric current, OTEC. There is a big potential for OTEC, especially off the coast of Sabah. You see, for this current, it basically reduces the difference between the top layer of the sea and the bottom layer. It needs a 20 degree sea depth, and it can generate its renewable energy as well as distilled water at the same time. So there is a group now working in UTM trying to get the first OTC plant operating. At the moment, capital costs are high. I attended one of the meetings, but the potential there for Sabah is especially enormous. They're talking of 60,000 megawatt. More than the nuclear reactors they can put in. If, in fact, if you put two proposed nuclear plants, if you invest the money into OTEC, but you need some investment. The problem is that at the moment, the government hasn't really moved in there. They're talking more of nuclear. Because nuclear, you know the history of nuclear. You have a discussion before.
What are your concerns?
My main concern is basically, I think, I've been always against nuclear for the last 30, 40 years. Mainly because I think the biggest problem of nuclear is waste disposal. There is no safe disposal of waste and the potential for nuclear waste being used for atomic weapon, right? And that's the reason why the whole concern with Iran is that they were redirecting the thing for potential bomb, the Islamic bomb from Iran sort of thing. And then the third thing is the technology is pretty sophisticated. Look at what happened in Fukushima. Of course, the accident don't happen anywhere, but if the accidents do happen, they can be terrible. Japanese are known to be very careful, they have a lot of experts. And you look at a Malaysian maintenance mentality. This has been my problem. That's been also my criticism of using incinerators, for example, to generate energy. Where is our maintenance capability and all this sort of thing? So I think the risks of nuclear are just too high. And to me, nuclear is not a renewable thing. In fact, if you look at the origin of nuclear, it's a byproduct of a weapon of mass destruction. It started from the atomic bomb. Before that, there were no nuclear energy. President Eisenhower pushed the atoms for peace because he wanted to work on nuclear weapons to continue. And he gave the guise of weapons for peace for electricity. Before that, electricity was not generated from nuclear.
In your mind, renewable energy is definitely the
future. Renewable energy and energy efficiency are the two ways to go. And of this, immediate energy efficiency is the cheapest and easiest option to do. But a lot of people are not doing it. Like, for example, you ask yourself, what can individual do? I said, go and make sure you buy efficient equipment, you save the energy, you switch off lights and power when you don't need it and all that. We were even discussing computers. Why do computers be on all the time when you're not using it? So it's these little things that add up. It's basically, I've told people who want to do anything about climate change or energy, I say, look at your petrol bill and look at your electricity bill. If you can cut them down, you will contribute to energy efficiency and reductions in climate change.
You walk the talk. You don't have a car.
Yeah, that's why I had to come by taxi. I was unhappy. If I could only come by bus here. Unfortunately, there's no bus coming here.
Yes. Has it been an inconvenience to you?
Well, on and off, I sometimes do spend more time. But then I look at it, I've reached that point in life where time is not everything. Anyway, my time on this world is also limited. So it doesn't matter. I spend another half an hour extra. That's it. But luckily, I don't have to travel every day.
Yes. What does Malaysia need to do move towards renewable energy?
I think it is not just by energy itself. It's a total approach change. We have to look at energy in a different way. And I think the problem in Malaysia, even among the mass media, is you look at energy in a very narrow perspective. You look at energy only in terms of electricity. But energy is more than electricity. Because what do your cars run on? They're not running on electricity until the electric vehicle come on. They're running on petrol. So energy is so many different forms it's using. So I think we really have to learn to see where we can use a much more friendly form of energy, where we can cut down forms. For example, we have no say on the way as an individual how the electricity is generated by TNB and all that. They're going more and more into coal. I've been trying to stop them, but the excuse has been there's the cheapest fuel available, sort of thing. I asked them to stick to gas, but Leo Mogi that says gas has a potential as a biochemical for chemical industry and all this sort of thing. Although gas is definitely less problematic compared with coal. So I think people have to start first becoming aware, see beyond the narrow things, understand the problem a bit broader, but then be prepared to do things in their daily life. Mm-hmm. So unless we internalize those things, It's all rhetoric. No use. I was at this climate change seminar forum that MCCG organized, and there was one lady giving suggestion: let's recycling, stop use styrofoam. And I was telling myself, I said, what difference does that make to CO2 emissions? Sort of thing? I said, why does she say we will stop using our cars that frequently? We will switch to public transport where possible. We will make sure that every month we travel, at least cut down our car journeys to half. Ah, that would make a difference. But that is the hardest part. I find all people, for all sorts of reasons, I've been talking to people for 10, 15 years, all kinds of excuses, why I can't do it, my lifestyle is this. I'm sure there's something in your lifestyle which you can change, which will have a direct bearing to the usage of electricity and petrol.
Are you not concerned for the future generation?
I'm concerned, but I'm very frustrated that the future generation doesn't seem to be very alert to this issue. And a good example of this, I was talking to your young intern just now, the future generation is so concerned about new models, new things, and electronic things are the waste. Look at the way you change your handphones. They also represent energy. What do you do with the old handphones? Why can't you use the old handphones? So I think this is where the danger is arising. On one hand, they are so hoo-ha, bung-ho on CO2, but these things, they won't change. Why do you need to change the handphone every year? And what happened to the old handphone? That represents energy. So I think this is the problem. Most people are not willing to internalize. So I think it basically comes to a problem of hypocrisy.
SEDDEM is partnering with SEDA to organize a roadshow in order to express the importance of this issue. You want to give me more details? This is going to be held in Hotel Sahara in Rawang, I understand?
Yeah. And that's where we are going to try to talk about these issues to them.
Okay.
And we are going to give them, we've asked them to bring the electricity bills, those who are attending, the 3 months electricity bill. We'll walk them through an audit. That's the best way we found. The people will learn where are they using the most energy. And through the audit exercise, we will be able to show them where in their household are the big energy guzzlers and then suggest to them what they can do about it.
In general, do we know now?
Oh, we know. The study that SEDDEM did, for example, in PJ, something about 7 years ago,
okay,
we found out that the biggest energy use among the PJ households, the 50 households that we surveyed in detail, we went to the household, we got the electricity bill, we got them to look at the refrigerators and all that. The biggest energy use was on travel, petrol. 70% of the energy was on petrol. 30% of the energy was other forms, electricity and gas for cooking. Out of that, about 25% was electricity. Out of the electricity, about 20% was on cooling and air conditioning. Refrigerators, 20-25%. Air conditioning and refrigerators. And about 10-15% was on electrical water heaters, especially the big old type. Then, lighting was very small. Lighting was only 2-3%. So nowadays, when we do this study, we tell them, forget about counting your lights and all this other thing. Just focus on your refrigerators, on your air conditioning. But the problem is, many households don't even know the power. What is the rating of the equipment? You need to know the rating of the equipment before you can calculate, because you multiply the wattage with the number of hours to get the kilowatt hours of you need. So that's where we have come up with a rough guide to give them a guide. Okay, if your equipment is this old, this will be the average reading you take, because they're not in the household. If in the household, you would ask them to go back, look at the back of your refrigerator and see what the rating is. Look at the back of your aircon, see what the rating is, or look for the pamphlet when you bought that aircon itself. And do an estimate. So that is why I've been quarreling with the government for a long time sort of thing on this issue. When they want to give money, they want to give money for people to replace LED bulbs. I say it's good, but it does not make a big difference in the overall electric consumption. I say, why don't you simple thing, give people subsidized insulating of the roof so that people don't have to use the air conditioning that much. That's what I did in my house. I bring the temperatures down by insulating the roof. So I think that sort of thinking has not come through. And that is why when even the media discusses from the electricity, you get carried over household electrical consumption. But you end the total household electricity consumption. It's so small compared with the industrial electricity consumption. But the number of industrial consumers are less. So you tend to focus on the household. But I say, hey, why are you wasting your time on the household? Go and look at the industry. Look at the commercial operations, hotels, mega malls. They consume more electricity. Can you get them to save? Because if they can save 10%, that's equivalent to 1,000 households maybe. So I think this is the other problem we have in analysis. It's very similar to remember when there was during Tun Mahathir's time when there was an electricity failure, the grid collapsed. What were your headlines? Energy crisis. Mm-hmm. It wasn't an energy crisis. It was an electricity crisis. But we call it energy crisis. So I think media and the people are also a bit fuddled. And because of that, you pinpoint the wrong things. Because I jokingly ask, I say, if it's an energy crisis, your cars shouldn't be moving. How come your cars are moving? Your oil is still there. Mm-hmm. So this is why I think the most important thing when it comes to energy, even to the government we are commenting, I'm commenting now, I say, please specify when you talk energy, it's electricity. When you talk energy, then you must be much broader. So all the statistics, very often you produce, like the figure that you got, 1.2 million tons of kiloton, equivalent, oil equivalent, doesn't mean it's all oil. Is the energy expressed in terms of oil? Mm-hmm. But some of it will be biomass. Some of it will be some other form. And then, very often, when they want to do CO2 reduction, everybody focuses on the electricity component, like KETA, for example. Partly because KETA is actually the Ministry of Electricity. It's not Ministry of Energy. We don't have a Ministry of Electricity in this country, of Energy in this country. When I proposed one, and I said, merge all the functions of the Prime Minister's Department, which is oil and gas, together with electricity. You know, minister was saying, I'm asking for a mega ministry. But that's the only way we can address issues. So I think we have a structural problem. We also have an organizational problem. We have a public perception issues.
And so you can join this workshop on the 24th of October, am I correct?
Yeah. At 9 a.m.
At 9 a.m. at the Hotel Sahara Rawang, and on Sunday, the 25th of October. That's over 2 days.
The workshop is on the Sunday.
Okay, so the workshop.
The exhibition is on Saturday.
Sure. So there will be an exhibition at the Tesco Rawang on Saturday, the 24th of October, and a half-day free-of-charge workshop at the Hotel Sahara Rawang on Sunday, the 25th of October. If you're joining the workshop, you may want to have a look at your fridge and find out the power and
bring your electricity bills.
That's right. So that will be a little bit more effective in terms of calculating your energy consumption. Thank you very much, Mr. Gurmit Singh, the chairman of SETDEM, talking to us about renewable energy and energy efficiency on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.